1-800-723-8289. We want to hear from you tonight. A lot that we want to talk about. We're going to open our show tonight with the unexpected news 2 days ago that President Barack Obama won the Nobel Peace Prize. It was a decision that left conservatives and liberals scratching their heads, given that Obama has been president less than 9 months and was only in office about 2 weeks before the deadline for Nobel Peace Prize nominations. Charles Lipson from the University of Chicago joins us by phone tonight. Charles is a political science professor. He's written several books on international politics and has written extensively on the problems of forging international cooperation after the Cold War. Dr. Charles Lipson, welcome to our program tonight. And tell me your reaction when you heard that Barack Obama won the Nobel Peace Prize.
At first, I thought that the Onion newspaper had taken control of the committee.
You thought this was something in the Onion?
Yeah, I thought it was something from Saturday Night Live. I mean, it's as if you gave the Nobel Prize in medicine to an undergraduate who'd just taken organic chemistry and was ready to and was hoping to become a doctor.
What if he said he was hoping to cure cancer someday? Wouldn't that
exactly
warrant a prize?
Exactly. I don't fault President Obama for accepting the prize, but I think that it's a humiliation to the committee that gave it. It's just ludicrous. And I have not heard of any serious students of international politics who have thought that this is a good award. People have the usual lines are couldn't stop laughing, things like that. The main point that a number of people have made, but I think it's quite right, is he was given this award for services in not being George Bush.
But can an argument be made, given the president's thin record on international affairs, that giving him this award at this time, because of, I know you said he's not George Bush, but is it a
right
statement from the Nobel Committee about its positive view towards America in the post-Bush era?
Well, that's one way of looking at it, and that may be how they look at it. But I think this is another case of the Nobel Prize Committee inserting itself awkwardly, clumsily into American politics. They've done it several times. It's important to recognize that the Nobel Peace Prize is sometimes given to really distinguished people and often given to the truly awful. Moreover, a number of people who truly deserved it, Mahatma Gandhi, for example, Vaclav Havel, have never received it. By the same token, they gave it to a Stalinist terrorist, Li Duk To, who was involved in the fight against in the communist fight in Vietnam. They've given it to a scoundrel like El Baradei. They've given it to all sorts of people who are hucksters and fraudsters. And they gave it to, the last time they gave it to a U.S. Secretary of State, they gave it to, well, one of the last times, they gave it to George Marshall, but not really for his services as Secretary of State. But they gave it to the people who signed the 1929, I think it was, treaty called the Kellogg-Briand Pact, in which all the nations of the world signed a treaty saying they wouldn't go to war. They wouldn't go to war. You may recall World War II happened after that. So the fact that these people give a prize is almost, this sort of thing is laughable.
Eric Edelstein is our liberal, our Democrat tonight. What were your thoughts when you heard that the president had won, Eric?
Well, I agree with the professor from the standpoint of it being surprising. I think everyone was surprised, including the president and the White House, by their own reactions. I think his humility in accepting it and describing it as a call to action more than for accomplishment. I think he's the first to recognize that he hasn't earned what would be perceived as accomplishment. I guess what surprises me, and with all due respect to Professor Lipson, I don't think it's laughable when the world and expressed through this Nobel Committee is so hungry for some sort of change in international relations. And I think not just the repudiation of Bush, but we have major challenges facing this planet. And I think in some ways, you can disagree with it, you can say it's right or wrong, this committee is saying the United States remains the dominant international player on a planet in peril, on nuclear proliferation, on the issues of torture, of hot wars and cold wars, and the issue of terrorism. And they're saying, we hope that Barack Obama can be the messenger that can help solve some of these problems.
Well, that's what I mean by inserting themselves into American politics. But I want you to think into the 1930s, Eric, and ask yourself whether this kind of committee would have been more likely to give the Nobel Prize to the people in England who wanted to give up and disarm and left England vulnerable. They never gave the prize to Winston Churchill, who, if his plans to build up the British Army and the British Air Force especially had been taken, we might have prevented the war. The way you make peace is not always to surrender first.
Well, excuse me, how is President Obama surrendering, Professor? I'm not sure I understand
that. I'm not claiming
that
he's surrendering.
Okay.
What I'm saying is that we don't know what his policies
sure.
are going to be on all of the important issues. There is no Obama foreign policy
sure.
other than he has said things to the Israelis, he's said things to the British which upset the British, he's made a number of statements. We don't know what his policy is on Iran. We only know that he's continuing the Bush policy, essentially, on Iraq. He's promised he's going to close Guantanamo, but he hasn't actually done it. We don't know what his policy is going to be in Afghanistan. We don't know what his policy is going to be about nuclear proliferation on a global basis. We essentially don't know what his foreign policy is.
Sure. I just find, and I don't ascribe this to the professor, but the sort of vitriol on the right, it was sort of the applause that America didn't get the Olympics, the sort of laughing at the prize. When there's all these problems and challenges facing us, I think in some ways there is a certain patriotism that if this happened on the other side, Democrats would be attacked for that.
Simpson, does the right want Obama to fail?
I don't think so, John. And I think in this case, look, the reactions from other people have been particularly noteworthy to me. Some of my favorites, I know we're going to take a break here. President Obama should be given the Cy Young Award for throwing out the first pitch of the All-Star Game. I particularly like that one. I'm with the professor on this. It's a work in progress, but certainly not work deserving of the Nobel Prize.
We will be back in Chicago, 1-800.
Introducing the Ally Bank 12-month high-yield CD with such a great annual return of 2.05% APY. People think there's a catch. But no, no catch. No teaser rate, no limited-time offer, no fine print, jargon, or legalese, no hidden tricks, traps, pitfalls, curveballs, or doublespeak. Just a 12-month high-yield CD with a rate that's among the most competitive in the country. Call Ally at 877-247-ALLY or go to allybank.com. Ally. Straightforward. Member FDIC.
NAPA has brakes for just about anything, but no one makes brakes for the one thing we'd like to stop most, breast cancer. That's why NAPA is proud to partner with Susan G. Komen for the cure. And this month, when you spend $25 at a participating NAPA Auto Parts store or NAPA Auto Care Center, you'll get a free NAPA Susan G. Komen for the cure travel mug while supplies last. NAPA will also donate $250,000 to Komen. NAPA, get the good stuff and support a great cause.
And Carol Felsenthal, I know you've got some thoughts on this discussion.
First thing, Lee Duck To gave the prize, did not accept the prize, refused to accept it. And there are a lot of people.
Did he win the year that Kissinger won?
He and Kissinger won at the same time. Okay. And Kissinger tried to return the prize, and it was told that he couldn't do that because I guess he accepted it and then decided, changed his mind. A lot of people, and I include myself in this group, thought that that's what Barack Obama should have done. That would have been a graceful way. He should have said, I don't deserve it. It's too early. I'm not going to accept it. Now he has an opportunity when he goes to Oslo on December 10th to give a knock it out of the park speech. And I think in some ways this Nobel Prize should be for speech writers, because it's the words that he doesn't write himself but are written for him that caught the attention of the Nobel Prize committee. And I don't think – I think what they were saying about America is not, as I think Eric said, that it's – or you said that it's a dominant country, an important country, but they're saying – we're, it's better now than it was when W. Bush was in.
According to the Nobel people, under Bush, there was no vision of a positive future, and now the Nobel people think that.
Right, and then in America is going to be, in a way, just another country working with other countries instead of a chauvinistic bully.
Charles Lipson, do you, is it an option for Obama to turn it down?
Too late now.
It was an option. It was an option before he made his speech in the Rose Garden or wherever he made it. I think that Carol hit the nail right on the head. He might have looked as if he were rude or snubbing the world if he had returned it, but if he had gracefully said, "I hope to be worthy of this with as my foreign policy unfolds and as we really achieve things," I think he would have, in effect, risen above the fray. But he's in effect.
Didn't he say that?
Accept it, and I think that's what we should assume. He's going to accept it, but I don't think that it especially helps him. In a way, I think it's rather like his premature trip to Europe when he was on the campaign, being cheered. Believe me, I spoke to a number of European diplomats. I made a tour for the State Department just before the election and went to a number of European capitals, spoke with a number of people, and the State Department all kept saying the same thing, that the people in Europe are so enthusiastic for Obama and so ready to be rid of George W. Bush that the real goal is to try to tamp down expectations about what would be realistic for American policy.
Apparently, the American people were pretty enthusiastic to have Obama replace Bush, too, because they overwhelmingly voted for him. But I do think, Professor, he said those things in his speech. He said, "I haven't done things worthy of this. I take this as a call to action. I hope that I can live up to the spirit and the promise of this award."
He said he didn't think he deserved it.
Yeah.
Did you think, Professor, that his speech was a humble speech on Friday?
I thought that the speech was humble, but humility has not been his strong suit, actually.
Let's go to finish that thought, Professor.
No. I mean, I think that there's a line in Hollywood that that was once said that the key to success is sincerity, and once you've learned to fake that, you got it made.
Let's go to the phones, 1-800-723-8229. George is listening to us on our flagship station, WLS in Chicago. Hi, George.
Hi, how are you, Mr. Dempsey?
Good.
I would have to agree in part with Professor Lipson in this regard. It was a political statement on the part of the Nobel Committee. But I believe the Nobel Prize that they gave Barack Obama was really for the American people, for turning their back on the Bush administration and the neocons. I just returned from a trip to Europe, and the Bush administration frightened the Europeans, especially this missile defense shield in Poland and the Czech Republic, which was very, very unpopular with Europeans. It was really aimed not at protection from Iranian missiles, but it was a thumb in the eye of Medvedev and Putin putting a missile defense system on the Russian border. So I think in the spirit of the Nobel Committee, this is really an award to the American people for rejecting the neocon philosophy, which created problems all over the world, including the disastrous economy we've had for the past 8 years.
I think the caller is basically right in saying that that's what the award was given for.
George, thank you for calling. Let's go to Los Angeles. Robert is listening to us on XM Sirius. Hi, Robert.
How are you today?
Good.
Thanks for taking my call. You know, I just wanted to go back just a bit. You made a comment. You had a caller just a few moments ago before your break articulate some of the reasons, actually looking down at President Obama for the things that he feels that he has not done. First of all, let's face it, and let's been this drum has been beaten several times, He was handed a plate full of crap there when he came into office from the 8 previous years with Mr. Bush. Secondly, the Republican Party, in my estimation, wants to see the president fail without a shadow of a doubt. This guy can't even chew gum correctly as far as the Republicans are concerned. Every minute little thing, even the fact of going to, I think that the Republicans were extremely happy that we did not get the Olympics in Chicago, just for the fact to see that Obama, you know, he was the one who failed. He's the one that wasn't able to get it. Or as some talk show hosts call him, the anointed one. We've got a president who is the people's president. We don't have a recovering alcoholic without a program in that office. Thank God. We got a guy who was in there before who was acting as president but was being dictated to as a puppet by the other administrative officials in that office.
Thank you, Robert. Thank you very much for your call. Nick Sitson, what are you
Robert, let me make a couple of points here. And the first one is that, make no mistake in your mind, Democrats wanted George W. Bush to fail, particularly as it became clear to them that they needed a defining issue or series of issues to run against President Bush in 2004. But I don't want to relitigate the Bush years. The fact remains that President Obama ran for office on a campaign of serving as a post-partisan president. He ran with extraordinarily high-minded rhetoric about leaving partisanship behind us. So whatever the facts may be about why he was given the Nobel Prize, or whatever the facts may be about how Republicans responded to that award, it's his responsibility to figure out a way to communicate to this country why he's going to receive it, what it means for the future of the country's foreign policy. And frankly, if he really wanted to do something incredibly effective, he would give credit to the men and women in uniform whose sacrifice make American diplomacy influential in the world in the first place.
But Nick, what if the president were to say, don't blame me because
I didn't campaign for it.
Yeah,
he didn't campaign for it.
I didn't campaign for it. They gave it to me, and don't blame me
And people do campaign for it. And Obama was genuinely surprised. If Rahm Emanuel and David Axelrod didn't know, you know that this came out of the blue. And, you know, he has done one of the things he did right away was say that he's going to give the prize money, $1.4 million, to charity.
He has to.
And
it's against ethics
now
to accept
everybody who's got a column is telling him what he should say in the speech. And what you're echoing is Tom Friedman. I don't mean that you're plagiarizing or stealing from him, but it's an interesting idea. And Tom Friedman wrote today that Barack should get up there in Oslo, and you should say this is for the American soldiers and take it back to the First World War going forward.
Can I make one other point, John, on this? And I know they don't give this is not the economics prize. But I think this sort of bubbling up notion that it's been 9 months and he hasn't done anything, I got to take issue with it. I got to take issue with it because when he came in, and now we're a year out from when the economic markets collapsed, and we've now had the retrospectives. We had long New Yorker pieces on what went on day to day with Paulson and how they got Bush to bail out AIG and all that kind of stuff. And we were a lot closer to worldwide economic collapse. Now, I don't say that Barack Obama single-handedly prevented that complete meltdown, but I think the very fact that it was a new administration, he took initial steps on the three-quarters of a trillion-dollar stimulus package. They brought together the economic leaders of the major powers around this world. And frankly, as bad as things still are, and they're really bad, we sort of stopped the free fall. So
everybody who has the sort of serious economists who've looked at this all give tremendous credit ultimately to Bernanke and the Fed for stepping in.
Who was reappointed by Obama.
So that is one thing that Obama
who was
did.
Reappointed, that's right. And Obama gets partial credit for that. The jury's still out on the stimulus package, but I haven't seen anybody who's made an argument other than politicians that it's a good thing. I think that it's been a kind of minor job creator, mostly in government kinds of stuff, and the fact is most of the stimulus, something on the order of 4/5 of it, has not yet been spent. It was kind of sold under the idea that it would pull us out of the recession, but it was basically a long-term big government spending program.
Let's try to squeeze in one more call before our break. Paul is in Racine, Wisconsin, listening to us on WLS. Hi, Paul.
Good afternoon, John, panel. A lot of good talk here. One thing that I find that is very interesting is there cannot be a discussion with people on the left about President Barack Obama's presidency and, more importantly, his foreign policy platform without less than a minute into it, all of a sudden reverting back to Bush.
Paul, hold that thought. Hold that thought. We're going to keep you on through the break. If you can hang on, Paul, in Racine, Wisconsin, we're going to take a break. This is Beyond the Beltway, coming to you tonight from Chicago. I'm John Dempsey, sitting in for Bruce Newman. Our phone number, if you want to join us, 1-800-723-8289.
Years of engineering excellence is right on time. It's GMC Truck Month. Get into the Sierra 1500 SLT with an available 403 horsepower 6.2-liter V8. It's the most powerful half-ton V8 in its class. Plus, it comes with the safety and security of OnStar, standard for 1 year. And now get great financing offers, like 0% APR for 60 months for qualified buyers on all 09 Sierras, or $6,000 total cash back on 09 Sierra 1500 extended and crew cab vehicles that have been in stock the longest. Step up to the best. It's GMC Truck Month. See your GMC dealer today. Based on 2009 GM large pickup segment, excludes other GM vehicles. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations. Cashback only on 20% of vehicles available to dealer as of 9/21/09. Monthly payment is $16.67 for every $1,000 you finance. Example down payment 8.3%. Some customers will not qualify. Not available with some other offers. Take delivery by 11/2/09. See dealer for details.
This evening, our number 1-800-723-8289. We've got a distinguished group of panelists with us tonight. We have got Carol Felsenthal, biographer, magazine writer, Huffington Post blogger. You wrote Clinton in Exile, a president out of the White House. And I want to ask you in a few minutes your thoughts about how Bill Clinton must have reacted.
Whoa!
Yeah, can you imagine, Charles? That's Charles Lipson. We've been hearing from him tonight. He is a distinguished political science professor at the distinguished University of Chicago in the Hyde Park neighborhood on the south side of Chicago. Our liberal guest tonight, Eric Edelstein, a Democratic activist, public relations consultant here in Chicago, a partner with the Edelstein Liston Communications firm. Eric, it's good to have you here tonight.
Thanks, Jim.
And our Republican is Nick Zitzen. Nick is a government policy advisor, works for Dykema Public Relations, and you work for Mitt Romney and Tommy Thompson.
It's distinguished, Dykema.
Distinguished, exactly, Dykema. We also have our friend Paul from Racine, Wisconsin, listening to us on WLS in Chicago. And, Paul, you were making a point right before the break. What were you going to say?
Well, what I was saying was that, you know, you can't talk to a person on the left or a liberal about what President Obama is doing without less than a minute into the conversation, they revert back to talking about former President Bush in the last 8 years. The point is they can't defend Barack Obama because he's not doing anything. The fact that he got the Nobel Prize, it's pretty much understood that it was style over substance. He hasn't done anything. And when you look, for example, and I got lectured for 8 years from the left about how the former president and his policy, that's not how you handle foreign policy. And the people on the right who speak about his failure are looking at and seeing exactly what happened with the Olympic bid and saying, so how is this any better? And I think Chicago had a great plan going in. They could have talked about the financing. They could have talked about where they were going to hold the events, how they were going to do it. But they completely miscalculated. This is a microcosm of what I'm talking about. Oh. They felt, send Barack Obama over there, the rock star, with his wife, who made just an egregious mistake. And just a laughable mistake when she talked about how she sat on her father's lap 25 years ago when Carl Lewis was winning the 4 gold medals in Los Angeles. I mean, how stupid does she think these people are? It shows you how they've miscalculated. And when you look at it in a bigger sense, and I'll ask the lefty on the panel, how is Barack Obama going to handle Iran getting a nuclear weapon?
Paul, thank you, Paul, for joining us. Eric Edelstein, what's your reaction to that?
Well, again, I don't buy that he hasn't done anything. I think stabilizing an economy in collapse, moving forward on passing a budget that Bush couldn't do in the entire last year of his term, moving further on health care reform, which everyone, right, left, middle, everywhere, says something needs to be done. We're closer to it than we ever have. Look, he's been in office for 9 months, and I think there is this – there's no question. Nick's right. The expectations were so high for Obama. No human being can live up to what was done. But I think this notion of what do people want him to do? I think they want to change the conversation. I think the conversation's been changed. They want development of new policies internationally and domestically. I think we are getting that. And they demand that this economy improve.
But Eric, do you think that he wishes he didn't win the Nobel? Is this going to cause him more problems?
Oh, I don't think they were doing high fives in the White House when they got this. There's no question it was complicated. But I do think I think Carol said it, and maybe the professor did. I think he has an opportunity when he goes to Oslo to give a transformative speech. You know, and maybe the Swedes just couldn't get him to come to Sweden, and this is the only way they can get Obama.
And, you know, people are going to forget, just like they're going to forget about the Olympics. This is something that people like us think about and we think is really important, and some of the callers who are political junkies. But he will be a Nobel laureate, and nobody's going to remember a year from now that this was even controversial.
And
when he goes, he really can do a lot to boost his policy. There is at this point, there was a Bush doctrine of foreign policy, whatever you thought of it or whatever ridicule it encountered, but there is no Obama policy.
But should there be?
Yeah, look, Bruce Dumont has a funny habit of putting me in this chair, John, for some of the worst possible moments for Republican. I was here just as the president's term ended and asked to help evaluate the Bush administration. look, the problem that President Obama is going to have with getting the Nobel Prize, whether or not he deserved it, is it puts regular Americans in the same seat too soon into his presidency. Judge him. Does he deserve it? I think that's a dangerous place for a young president to be. And let me tell you what I think the second biggest problem is going to be. After Michael Steele, chairman of the Republican National Committee, issued the party's initial response, which was questioning the merits of his winning the award, there was a fire-breathing quote issued back from the Democratic National Committee that said something to the effect of, Republicans seemingly have chosen to take up lot with terrorists and the Taliban.
Yeah,
now, I can't tell you how many times during the Bush administration Republicans were criticized by Democrats for using that same logic.
Right.
You can't run as a transformational figure and use the same tired stuff.
What did you think of Steele's reaction? Because I thought it was interesting. He went right to the economy.
And this does not help the Americans who are out of work, the fact that he won the Nobel Prize. What did you think of Michael Steele's statement?
I thought it was smart politically, and I thought that Republicans played it well. I think every elected Republican in Washington issued a response that was measured. We think it's good for the U.S. The party went zero in on the issue of what he's done to help Americans.
I think this, you know, he did run on post-partisanship. And I think to blame him for the Republican vitriol that refuses to play bipartisanship is a little bit like blaming the victim in this situation. The fact is, it's like he can't do anything. I mean, he couldn't read to children. Right? The president of the United States, how sad is it in this country that the president of the United States wants to give a back-to-school greeting that is completely innocuous, and we have people saying, I don't want the president of the United States talking to my children?
But remember that the Democrats did it.
Charles Lipson, go ahead.
People were complaining about the lesson plans, and they're already – and they were concerned about that. Frankly, I think
they hadn't even read the text.
All beer. I think all of this stuff is small beer. There's going to be two or three big issues – that are going to come up in the midterms, and then maybe the same issues will come up when President Obama runs for re-election. One is unemployment still high? Not only is the economy recovering, but is it a jobless recovery or is it a robust recovery? If it's a robust recovery, that's great, and he'll be in very fine shape. If it is a weak recovery, he'll be facing problems. The second thing is whether there's anything that looks like a terrorist attack here. All the stuff about closing Guantanamo and all the issues about whether or not they've been protecting the United States will fall away if he can, in effect, say, look, whatever, we managed to keep the country safe while protecting our civil liberties. On the other hand, and there's a large element of chance in all of this, if the United States, or perhaps even some of its biggest allies, especially England, were to be attacked, but especially the United States, then, you know, the president pays a price. So I think all of this stuff is about political posturing. People are going to want to know, does the foreign policy of this government keep us safer? Is the economy back on track?
Let's go to Mike in Lompoc, California, listening to us on XM Sirius. Hi, Mike.
Good evening, Mr. Dempsey and panel. Great show as usual. Makes a good counterbalance to my blood pressure medication.
Well, we'll take that as a compliment, Mike. What are your thoughts?
It actually is. I wouldn't miss the show. With all due respect to the gentleman who was making a comment with regard to the vitriol from the right, my response to that and one other response would be that if President Obama received one-tenth the vitriol that President Bush did in 8 years, there's no doubt in my mind that Nancy Pelosi would already be asking for martial law.
Mike, thank you very much. Eric, you have to admit that for the 8 years that George Bush was president, there was a lot of hatred spewed at him.
Well, he earned a lot of it. I mean, there's no question. There's a lot of vitriol on both sides, and I think it is part of what was Barack Obama's message. It wasn't that it's just on the right. Is that it's become so divisive that it makes it difficult for us to operate in Washington.
But where does the cycle stop?
Right. Well, I think you are seen pushing through major legislation, whether Republicans are going to participate, play along, be part of what everyone agrees needs to happen, which is major health care reform. But the fact is, the vitriol against George, but there was a moment in time post 9/11, and I don't want to relitigate the Bush years, where everyone was rooting for him. So I take issue with Nick. Democrats weren't looking for him to fail. They were looking for a moment for the United States to come together, and unfortunately, he squandered that moment. I'm not sure President Obama has had that moment.
But it was such a catastrophe. That's I hope, in my lifetime, a once-in-a-lifetime thing.
We never see Obama put into position.
It was a position that Bill Clinton wanted to be put in.
It's an extreme example, but when you come out and you say, we're going to reform health care before you even have a plan, and the right wing says this will be his Waterloo if we can stop him, I mean, it's saying we're going to play politics at the expense of anything else.
Well, I think that it's wrong to urge us to become postpartisan on big political issues. I think that it's perfectly fine to have these kinds of debates. I think what's wrong is to yell at each other at the top of our lungs over the little things, and to engage in personal attacks, the kind of attacks that are basically all about your background and that sort of thing.
I agree. I couldn't agree more, Professor.
I think on health care, people have deeply held beliefs. I don't think that it should be postpartisan.
We do have different beliefs, and it is possible to do this without dehumanizing each other and just running everybody through the ringer. Professor, hang on. We'll do another segment.
Since OnStar began, we've responded to over 100,000 automatic crash alerts.
OnStar emergency. Are there any injuries? Yes, help! Get me out of here!
Okay, we'll get you some help. I'm contacting the 911 center now.
In a crash, an OnStar advisor can automatically receive an alert.
911.
This is OnStar emergency. I have a collision here. On County Road 403, airbag deployment. I'm going to conference you in on the line with her.
Is anyone injured?
I am. My chest, my hip. My leg.
All right, ma'am. We're sending help to you. What did you hit?
A tree. I'm trying to stay calm.
I have some additional crash data.
What do you have?
The reported Delta V was 21 miles per hour from the front.
With automatic crash response, an OnStar advisor can share your exact GPS location and critical crash details with first responders so they're better prepared to help.
EMT is on the scene.
I hope you're going to be okay.
Thank you.
OnStar is standard for the first year on 14 Chevy models. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations.
A live coming to you from Chicago. I'm John Dempsey, sitting in this evening for Bruce Dumont. One of our panelists tonight is the distinguished author Carol Felsenthal. And you wrote the book Clinton in Exile, A President Out of the White House. And Maureen Dowd has got an interesting piece in today's New York Times, but I think you beat her to the punch.
I did last Friday.
On the Huffington Post, imagining what Bill Clinton would think about Barack Obama winning the Nobel Peace Prize.
Well, now I'm positive I would bet.
You haven't spoken to Bill.
No, I haven't. Bill won't spoke. Bill gave me a big runaround, and I never actually spoke to him. But he flirted with me a lot about the possibility of an interview. Bill Clinton is a person who has in his way campaigned for the Nobel Peace Prize. He wants it.
You alluded to this before the break that when September 11th happened, and I think this was a direct quote from Bill Clinton. He said he regretted that something that bad never happened while he was president.
Although he didn't say that bad. He had the Oklahoma City bombing.
Right.
And if you remember, he gave a speech that was really a brilliant and a moving and an effective speech. But he was never on a kind of a war footing, and he always thought that he missed that. When on 9/11/2001, he was in Australia, given one of his many speeches for $200,000-$300,000 a crack. And when he heard the news, he called an AP reporter who had covered him both when he was governor of Arkansas and when he was president, and he gave the AP reporter a statement and talked about how everybody has to rally around George W. Bush. What he really needed to do was get himself in the mix. Bill Clinton, when Jimmy Carter won the Peace Prize in 2002 and Al Gore won the Peace Prize in 2007. I did 165 interviews for this book, and I know that he was flummoxed. He was upset. He thought that he deserved the prize. He modeled his post-presidency after Jimmy Carter's, and that's what his Clinton Foundation, his Clinton Global Initiative are all about. And he has done some excellent work, and it's quantitative. It's objective. You can look and see what he's done. I think when he discovered this, he must have really felt slighted. Now, you haven't heard from him. The other one is Hillary Clinton. And you remember during the campaign, Hillary gave a speech where she made fun of Barack Obama. She talked about the celestial choirs seas parting. So she had the same idea about Obama. But Obama now appoints her Secretary of State, a brilliant move. But then he marginalizes her by appointing George Mitchell to take care of the Middle East and Richard Holbrooke to take care of Pakistan. He's got all of these special envoys. So Hillary Clinton is kind of, you know, pushed aside a little bit. I think both of them must have been feeling some grief.
I wanted to ask you, Carol, when I heard you were going to be on the panel tonight, I work for a station, you know, that's a very conservative station, and we have a lot of callers who say that Barack Obama is a narcissist. You, after writing the Bill Clinton book, I think are familiar with narcissism. Do you think that it's fair to refer to Barack Obama as a narcissist?
Oh, not in the way that Bill Clinton is. Bill Clinton has a need to be loved, need to have every single person in the room, conservative, liberal, whomever, think that he is the best thing since sliced bread. Obama is a far cooler character. And I think my feeling is Obama's a much better character.
Charles Lipson, what are your thoughts on that?
I think that they are very different kinds of personalities. Mm-hmm. I think, and I'd be interested in Carol's view, actually, on this. My feeling is that at the heart of Clinton, at the very center, there was nothing. And that was a defect, but it also meant that after his losses in the 94 midterm, he was able to shift back toward the center. He also had suffered a loss as the governor. He had been defeated in a reelection campaign for governor in Arkansas, and you learn by defeats. So I think Obama is a quite different character. He's more removed and aloof, but he also seems to have a fairly thin skin. And I wonder whether or not, if there are defeats in the midterm, and I, I, throw this open to the whole panel. If there are defeats in the midterm, so that some of the newly elected Democrats in the House and the like are defeated and some of the big gubernatorial races go the other way and so forth, whether they think that Obama is committed to a kind of left agenda and will stick with it, or whether he'll do something like what Clinton did and shift back toward the center.
Because, yes, in 94, Bill Clinton certainly did move to the center, Eric Edelstein, after the bad defeats that his party suffered with the Gingrich Revolution. What do you think about what the professor said?
Well, I don't know that I'm qualified to comment on the psychology of these two guys. What I will say is I think this president and the people around him are students of history. And I think they understand for a president to be successful, you have to do big things. I think trying to move health care, whether you agree or disagree, and I agree with the professor completely, we should disagree on this, as the president says, without being disagreeable. This is a major change in this country. I think to take that up this year with all the problems that are going on, I think this is a guy who recognizes he wasn't put there to be a placeholder. He is trying to do some transformative things, and it's really hard. We have a system, Professor Lipson knows better than I, that is basically built for inertia. It's built for things not to happen, which is a safeguard constitutionally. It is hard to create meaningful change in this country.
And on that note, we will wrap up hour number one of Beyond the Beltway. We say goodbye to Professor Charles Lipson from the University of Chicago. Professor, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us tonight.
My pleasure. My pleasure, John.
Thank you very much. We'll be back after this break, and we want to hear from you. We'll be talking about Afghanistan after the break. 1-800-723-8289. 1-800-723-8289.
Of engineering excellence is right on time. It's GMC Truck Month. Get into the Sierra 1500 SLT with an available 403 horsepower 6.2 liter V8. It's the most powerful half-ton V8 in its class. Plus, it comes with the safety and security of OnStar, standard for 1 year. And now get great financing offers, like 0% APR for 60 months for qualified buyers on all 09 Sierras, or $6,000 total cash back on 09 Sierra 1500 extended and crew cab vehicles that have been in stock the longest. Step up to the best. It's GMC Truck Month. See your GMC dealer today. Based on 2009 GM large pickup segment, excludes other GM vehicles. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations. Cashback only on 20% of vehicles available to dealer as of 9/21/09. Monthly payment is $1,667 for every $1,000 you finance. Example down payment 8.3%. Some customers will not qualify. Not available with some other offers. Take delivery by 11/2/09. See dealer for details.
I'm Felix. I've been doing tattoos for over 15 years. I get people in here who ask me about removing a tattoo they don't want anymore. I've really had nothing to help. And then I discovered Wrecking Balm. It's an easy daily fading system. The darkest, deepest pigments, they easily fade without any discoloring, blemishing, or scarring the skin. Wrecking Balm is really the best thing for tattoo regret.
Call right now, 1-800-507-4221 for your in-home 60-day risk-free trial. That's 1-800-507-4221. That's 1-800-507-4221.
It's quite a proposition when you think about it. You contact GEICO and you could save hundreds on your car insurance. 15 minutes, simple as that. Something they've been doing for over 70 years. You want car insurance and you want extra money in your wallet, done and done. Now, not only do you have some nice car insurance, you've got plenty of money to spend on some tasty biscuits. Or flowers for your mum. Or whatever it is you fancy.
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Get the good stuff!
Fall into savings this month with Napa. Get a $50 rebate when you spend $250 or more on quality Napa brake parts at participating Napa Auto Parts stores, Napa Auto Care Centers, or authorized repair facilities. Don't take chances with your car's most critical safety component. Get reliable Napa brakes. Go to NapaBrakes.com for rebate form and complete details. Offer ends October 31st.
Napa. Get the good stuff!
These are tough economic times, so I want you to think about something. Gold. At Goldline is the company you can trust for your gold needs. They've been in business since 1960, so call them today. 877-361-COIN. That's 877-361-COIN. They've been audited from a Big Four accounting firm. Their financials are solid. So call them today for a free investor's kit. 877-361-COIN. You get the free DVD and free shipping on your first order at 877-361-COIN. And remember, Goldline.com.
Featuring commentary by Democrat Eric Edelstein, Republican Nick Zitzen, and author Carol Felsenthal. Our program tonight coming to you from the XM Sirius Studios on Chicago's Great West Side, where our toll-free phone lines are open at 1-800-723-8289, 1-800-723-8289. And our callers on the line who want to talk about the Nobel Peace Prize want to let you know that we are moving on. We're going to be talking about Afghanistan, so if you want to call us back if you want to talk about Afghanistan, 1-800-723-8289. Carol Felsenthal, before we move away totally from the Nobel Peace Prize, you wanted to make one more comment about Obama winning as it pertains to his effectiveness on the world stage as we approach what to do about Afghanistan?
Well, it was this last Friday was one of the most interesting days in Obama's administration, I think. But before I get to that, there were two Republicans who I thought commented in a very gracious way.
One of them Tim Pawlenty?
When is Tim Pawlenty? Yes. I thought, he said there's only one thing you could say, and that's congratulations. Of course, Tim Pawlenty has every intention, I think, to run for president against Barack Obama. Pawlenty's a Republican in 2012. And the other one was John McCain, who said basically the same thing, congratulations, but then he has to understand that he has even more to live up to now. So that morning, Obama is awakened by Robert Gibbs, his press secretary, at 6 a.m., the Situation Room that got the news knew about it earlier, but they chose not to wake him. He's awakened at 6 a.m., told that he has won the Nobel Peace Prize. Later that afternoon, he meets, I think in the Situation Room, with his advisors on the foreign policy side, Hillary Clinton, I think there were probably almost 16, 18 people in that room, Joe Biden. And
was
what's
that
he
the
meeting?
Day of the video teleconference with Stanley McChrystal?
Yes. And what they're meeting about is whether to follow Joe Biden's advice on Afghanistan and use drones to kill the al-Qaeda people on the border between Afghanistan and Pakistan, or whether they follow General McChrystal's well-publicized public advice to add whatever it is, 40 or 60,000 more troops, which is the way that Hillary Clinton wants to go. And a surprising number of Democrats seem to be in that direction, too, not to mention Republicans. So he is, for all of the rhetoric about a peace prize, he's a wartime president, and he has to make a decision here. I mean, John McCain has already been critical and said he's approaching this in too leisurely a fashion and that the lives of our troops are on the line here.
Eric Edelstein, where do you rank the president in terms of how he has gone about this decision-making process in Afghanistan? In the campaign, Afghanistan was referred to as the good war, with Iraq being the bad war. That's the one you can blame George Bush for getting us involved in, and he took his eyes off the ball. He took his eyes off the ball in Afghanistan. Now Afghanistan is firmly in the lap of Barack Obama, and it will be known as his war. How do you think he's done?
Right. He inherited it. I mean, I think I'm impressed with the deliberative way he's gone about this. I don't think he's going to be bullied by people like McCain, who've been wrong from the beginning, wrong on Iraq, wrong on Afghanistan, wrong in terms of their judgment on what needs to be done. I don't think he's going to rush. I think the difference we have with this president, and I do give him marks, and it's not based on partisanship, is as opposed to the previous president, who never changed policy but always changed rationale, this president has been consistent on the rationale. But when he sees strategy or tactics that need to be adjusted based on what's going on the ground, he isn't afraid to call in the war council, to talk to General McChrystal, to talk to General Jones, who's the national security advisor, and make sure we're doing everything possible to do what Professor Lipson said is his main job, which is to keep the United States safe. Look, Afghanistan, we all know, has been what's been referred to as the death of empires, landing ground troops there and trying to win and create peace in a place that's only known war for decades, if not centuries, is a monumental task.
Yeah,
I want to correct the record real quickly here. Eric, Senator McCain, when it came to the issue about whether or not it was appropriate or advisable to send more troops to Iraq, which everybody now credits with the dramatic turnaround there, was right far ahead of most observers of that war. So let's give Senator McCain some credit where credit's due. Let's also say, you know, the president here has a real problem when it comes to what Eric refers to as a deliberative process, and it may very well be that. But just today, for anybody who watched the Sunday morning news shows, the chairwoman of the Intelligence Committee in the Senate, Dianne Feinstein, came out strongly supportive of the idea of sending additional troops to Afghanistan. But the chairman of the Armed Services Committee, Carl Levin of Michigan, came out against it. So here you have two very high profile, very influential Democratic members of Congress on total opposite sides of this issue. I sense a bit of a vacuum here, and it's the president's job as commander-in-chief to really make sure that when it comes to our policy in Afghanistan, which, as you rightfully said, John, was his top priority when it came to military conflict, there's no question mark about where we're going and how we're going to get there, and that there's unification behind American decision-makers on that end.
I want to read from a column by the conservative columnist Charles Krauthammer this week. He quotes Democratic consultant Bob Schrum, and Schrum says, "I was part of the 2004 Kerry campaign, which elevated the idea of Afghanistan as the, quote, right war to conventional Democratic wisdom. This was accurate as criticism of the Bush administration, but it was also reflexive and perhaps by now even misleading as policy." And then Krauthammer says, "which is a clever way to say that championing victory in Afghanistan was a contrived and disingenuous policy in which Democrats never seriously believed, a convenient 2x4 with which to bash George Bush over Iraq while still appearing warlike enough to fend off the soft on defense stereotype." What are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, Bob, all due respect to my friend Bob Schrum, he wasn't involved in the Obama campaign. He's talking about the Kerry campaign.
So I think the Obama campaign didn't want to go near him.
You know, guilt by association to suggest that that was their rationale. Yeah. Look, we know that attacks on the United States on 9/11 2001 were launched by terrorists based in Afghanistan, led by al-Qaeda, who was in cahoots with the Taliban, who was in charge of Afghanistan. That's where we were attacked from. To go to war in October 4th or October 7th, when the first American troops began or the bombing began in Afghanistan, was absolutely the right decision. War is never right. Retaliating when your nation is attacked and is a national security threat is the right thing to do. Shifting that focus then to Iraq, which had zero to do with what happened on 9/11, was a tragic mistake, one of the worst foreign policy mistakes we've made in the history of this country. The fact is, we have to make sure that Taliban, to the extent that they're helping al-Qaeda, do not allow them to reconstitute themselves on that border and sit there. We have not gotten bin Laden. We have not gotten his main deputies, and that remains a problem in the United States.
1-800-723-8289. Jim from South Elgin, we're going to get...
100 years of engineering excellence is right on time. It's GMC Truck Month. Get into the Sierra 1500 SLT with an available 403 horsepower 6.2 liter V8. It's the most powerful half-ton V8 in its class. Plus, it comes with the safety and security of OnStar, standard for 1 year. And now get great financing offers, like 0% APR for 60 months for qualified buyers on all 09 Sierras, or $6,000 total cash back on 09 Sierra 1500 extended and crew cab vehicles that have been in stock the longest. Step up to the best. It's GMC Truck Month. See your GMC dealer today. Based on 2009 GM large pickup segment, excludes other GM vehicles. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations. Cashback only on 20% of vehicles available to dealer as of 9/21/09. Monthly payment is $1,667 for every $1,000 you finance. Example down payment 8.3%. Some customers will not qualify. Not available with some other offers. Take delivery by 11/2/09. See dealer for details.
Bruce Dumont. We're talking about Afghanistan. We want to hear from you. 1-800-723-8289. Jim in South Elgin, Illinois, has been waiting patiently. He's listening to us on our flagship station, WLS. Hi, Jim.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good, very
good. Good show as usual. Mr. Edelstein, you might be a nice guy to, you know, as far as being a person, but your knowledge and your spinning of historical events I find is appalling. After
Set me straight.
All right, I will. First of all, the surge worked on Iraq. We cut and run after Vietnam. You could see the aftermath after Vietnam occurred. And Saddam, you know, certainly was part of the terrorist network that was all part of the pre-9/11 mixture. And George Bush did
Well, actually, he wasn't. I mean, he wasn't.
Yes, he was.
Based on what? Based on what?
Excuse me. Well, based on the fact that he was part of the terrorist network that, for example, would give people, you know, people money to their families for suicide bombers. He certainly treated and had a lot of people in this country for treatment. They found, you know, terror training camps there. And after 9/11, you know, when everybody else told you that, you know, your country was, well, obviously your country was under attack, you know, the weapons of mass destruction, which, you know, Bill Clinton didn't do anything about after the UN inspectors were kicked out in 1997, did they just disappear? I mean, it's ignorant to think that
where did they
Saddam
go?
Had nothing to do
with
9/11.
Well, where did they go? We were told we were going to war to find weapons of mass destruction, that there was an imminent attack likely, and they found none.
Some people said
that's
they
right.
went to
but
Syria.
Where'd they go? You're going to take Saddam's word and say, oh, well, they just disappeared. I let them go?
Well, Jim, let's not retry the whole Iraq mission. What do you think about a surge in Afghanistan? What are your thoughts about it?
I think it would work. If it worked in Iraq, I think it will work there.
Jim, thank you very much for calling. Let's go to Phil in New York, listening to us on XM Sirius. Hi, Phil.
Yes, hello. Just could I make one quick point regarding your last discussion regarding the Peace Prize? Let's not forget that there's a relationship between the economy and peace. And after the Depression of the 30s, we did get World War II. And we did possibly avert a depression after Obama came in, providing leadership and his legislative program. Regarding Afghanistan, one thing I think people need to realize is that the surge is more complex, was more complicated in Iraq than I think a lot of people realize. For example, in Bob Woodward's book, he mentioned that there were like covert activities by the CIA that were very effective. I don't think it's even been really – I don't think that publicly we know all of the details because they're covert activities, but I do think that those kinds of activities actually –
are you saying that they were as effective as bringing stability to Iraq as the surge? Is that what you're saying?
I recall seeing an interview with Bob Woodward where, and actually reading an excerpt from his book where he said that that was actually very effective and it was important.
All right, Phil, we thank you very much for calling us tonight. Carol, you were talking about Joe Biden, and he's writing in Newsweek magazine this week estimates that we're spending 30 times as much money in Afghanistan as we are in Pakistan, which Biden says is the real threat. Al-Qaeda, with the base that they have in Pakistan, according to Biden, remains the real threat to this country. He's an advocate of sending drones in and things like that. What do you think of the Biden
He's in opposition to Hillary Clinton, who's the Secretary of State. And, you know, people would always say that Biden really wanted to be Secretary of State. I never believed that. I think Biden wants the highest position he can possibly get. And so he's I'm not a fan of Joe Biden. I think that there's one word that describes him, and that's windbag. But it is interesting that Newsweek, he's not only saying that in Newsweek, he's on the cover,
of Newsweek.
And there was some speculation that I've heard that this was something that the Obama administration wanted. They want, not that the Obama administration runs Newsweek, but there was a big push by the administration to get this cover story out. And also, you know, but the subject of Bob Woodward is really interesting to me as well, because somebody leaked to Bob Woodward General McChrystal's report, which has caused so much controversy. Now, I have heard President Obama say, and people around him say, that we want to listen to the people on the ground in Afghanistan rather than maybe a Joe Biden sitting in his, you know, vice president's mansion.
And who's more on the ground than Stanley McChrystal?
But right. But then, you know, you look, if you look at history, LBJ was listening to the generals on the ground, and he wasn't questioning them enough. So the idea that Barack Obama has this kind of intelligence, which is unlike George W. Bush. George W. Bush didn't like cognitive dissonance. He didn't like to get reports and information that was disagreed with each other. Obama seems to be a true, you know, I think he's got a great brain, and I think he doesn't, he likes to hear those various sides, and then he's going to go through it and he's going to make a decision. And I have confidence in him on that ground.
Can what Carol is talking about be looked at as wishy-washiness or indecisiveness? What are your thoughts?
It could, John. And I think this decision that the president's about to make is important on so many levels. First and foremost, without question, we have men and women in harm's way over in Afghanistan, and we've invested lots and lots of precious treasure in that conflict. So this decision and its strategic implications are going to have a huge impact on the future of our or the potential of our success there. But it, to a lesser extent, and bringing it back to sort of a purely political context, even in the after, even in the lead up to the 08 elections with a considerable headwind, national security in general is an issue that Republicans continue to do better on. The president here has an opportunity, I think, to make not only an important decision, but to exercise, implement, and manage the communication of that decision in such a way that is going to make or break the reaction of the general public as far as his handling of national security issues.
But what if he's got a Democratic base on the left that does not want a surge in Afghanistan? You mentioned Carl Levin, the chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, on Meet the Press today, saying, "I oppose sending in more troops." What do you think, Eric?
This is why you want a president who's going to be deliberative. I mean, and I'm not giving puff to President Obama. This is a hard decision. We're talking about empires that have failed century after century here. Now he's got very disparate views. I think the remarkable thing about Obama is he has an ability to participate in events and remove himself and observe them objectively about himself at the same time and be objective. And I think that's frankly, in a decision like this, you want that.
But Carol talked about the McChrystal report being leaked to Bob Woodruff. And that begs the question, who leaked it? Is there a schism between McChrystal and Gates, the Secretary of Defense? And is there a fear by the people who leaked it that this is going to be a political decision rather than...
I think Gates is in the same car with Hillary Clinton. And I think that there is something of a schism. And it's interesting because Bob Woodward's working on a book. And he... Normally, he would save stuff for his book, even though he is an employee of the Washington Post newspaper. But this, he felt, was so important to get out that he went to press with it. And it's been, you know, it has really shaken everything up. Also, that meeting on Friday after he got the Nobel Peace Prize, President Obama, that was a 3-hour meeting in the Situation Room. And, you know, Obama was there. I really think he's an extremely, extremely intelligent person.
Bush wouldn't have had the patience.
No, I don't. Also, I think Bush would have said, this is too, he would have said, simplify, just give me the facts, give me the bullet points. And I think that was one of Bush's problems.
Don't rule out that it was a controlled leak, too. That in a sense, they wanted the trial balloon out there, just as they do the Newsweek thing, to say, look, these are really hard decisions. Let's not just make them in secret. Let's have lots of people participating and have the country, in a sense, have some sense of what's going on.
Here's what I know, John. The president has absolutely no reservoir of bipartisan support in Washington. Congress is split right down the middle. Whatever he does on this issue, whatever he decides to do in Afghanistan, my real hope for the men and women over there, for the future of the mission, is that the president's able to execute a decision and genders and encourage some bipartisan support here.
1-800-723-8289. Let's go to Edward, listening to us in Chicago on our flagship station, WLS. Hi, Edward.
Yeah, good evening, gentlemen. I'm in totally support of a surge in Afghanistan. In fact, I think we should go after Iran, especially after a soldier found some ammunition coming from Iran.
You're a supporter of the surge in Afghanistan?
Yes, I am. I think we should have more troops.
Edward, we thank you very much for calling us. Let's go to John, who's on the road listening to us on WLS. Hi, John.
Yes, good evening. I'll make this relatively short. I think that it's kind of pointless to talk about options which have no chance of ultimately succeeding in the goal that we need to accomplish. I think that history has proven that no matter how many military resources a nation has, that in a country like Afghanistan, they're not going to prevail. I also think it's pointless to talk about using drones and technological things to defeat an enemy who is hiding in some place like the tribal areas of Pakistan.
John, are you saying we should pull out of Afghanistan?
No, I'm not. What I'm saying is I think we should develop a completely new strategy which has a chance of succeeding. And I think the only way to defeat counterinsurgency is to cut off those people who support counterinsurgency. So I think what the United States needs to do is first identify the people who are lending the necessary support to the people who are threatening our security, and then take whatever means necessary.
All right, John, we thank you very much for your call tonight. 1-800-723.
Years of engineering excellence is right on time. It's GMC Truck Month. Get into the Sierra 1500 SLT with an available 403 horsepower 6.2 liter V8. It's the most powerful half-ton V8 in its class. Plus, it comes with the safety and security of OnStar, standard for 1 year. And now get great financing offers, like 0% APR for 60 months for qualified buyers on all 09 Sierras, or $6,000 total cash back on 09 Sierra 1500 extended and crew cab vehicles that have been in stock the longest. Step up to the best. It's GMC Truck Month. See your GMC dealer today. Based on 2009 GM large pickup segment, excludes other GM vehicles. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations. Cashback only on 20% of vehicles available to dealer as of 9/21/09. Monthly payment is $1,667 for every $1,000 you finance. Example down payment 8.3%. Some customers will not qualify. Not available with some other offers. Take delivery by 11/2/09. See dealer for details.
Author Carol Felsenthal, and thank you one and all for being here. Nick, you were making the point during the break about the Democrats' track record on national defense and how, in your opinion, the public and the Democrats did not really give George Bush a fair chance when he promoted the surge in Iraq.
I think it goes back even before that point, John. I mean, my feeling on it is that after 9/11, we proceeded into Afghanistan with great national unity. I think it was a political calculation after the decision was made to go into Iraq, which was supported by huge bipartisan majorities in Congress. it was a political calculation at that point to begin to call into question President Bush's decision-making and his fitness to make decisions about national security. And I think now the idea that somehow we're supposed to forget that conveniently and give the president, the current president, the benefit of the doubt on his decision-making for Afghanistan, I think it's
a flawed process. It was political to question George Bush on Iraq after the disaster of what had occurred there, after the changing for the reasons for going there, after not finding weapons of mass destruction, after all the death, after saying we'd be greeted as liberators, after finding out that the Defense Department had no plan post-war. It was political to criticize that?
I know that every Democrat with a serious track record on national security voted for that war, Eric, and I know this.
That's right.
That when
so they gave him the benefit of the doubt, did they not?
No, they embraced the mission. They encouraged the strategy, and then as the strategy began to get difficult, when they realized it was no longer politically convenient to support the war that they authorized, they bailed because they needed a wedge issue to run against the president. That's a fact.
But how long does this? How long can this country stomach a war in Afghanistan, which I think our last caller pointed out, he said a place like Afghanistan, and it's a different terrain than Iraq. It's Iraq, a highly urbanized area. Afghanistan, very mountainous, a lot of these little small villages, fundamentally very, very backwards people, many of them illiterate. Carol, how long can this can our country, our people, our citizenry stomach a prolonged engagement there?
Well, I think it depends on the economy. And, you know, people talked a lot during the George W. Bush administration of the billions of dollars that we were spending in Iraq that we weren't spending in this country to build schools and hospitals, et cetera. And it also depends on whether there's another attack on the United States. I think if we live in safety as we have, I think it's going to be more and more difficult to try to persuade people to accept this war and accept the money that's going to be expended there. And what we were talking during the break, that whenever President Obama talks about Afghanistan, and if we were to succeed in Afghanistan, we'd be the first country that was able to do that.
The Russians failed.
Right. And two things. When he talks about Afghanistan, he always talks about the women and the children, the women and especially the girls who have acid thrown in their faces as they're trying to go to school, the women who are kept as a kind of chattel, covered from with just slits for their eyes. And I always think about Obama having a very strong and I think great relationship with his wife, Michelle, and having two daughters and a sister. I just think he sees it in that kind of through that kind of feminine spectacle.
Let's go to the call to callers right now. 1-800-723-8289. John, listening to us in the great town of Decatur in central Illinois on WLS. Hi, John.
How you doing? My point is, when somebody mentioned Biden and his drones, you don't win a war by the air. You can move the enemy around, but you win a war by controlling the territory, so you have to have boots on the ground. But the big problem here is you're not going to win in Afghanistan. I think Alexander the Great even lost in Afghanistan. They haven't lost a war in there, I think, 1,000 years. Basically, we're there for Osama bin Laden. Is that correct?
Well, the search has been on for Osama bin Laden ever since September 12, 2001, and we haven't found him yet.
Yeah, so what we've done is we've put him in to a place he can hide, and he's not going to come out.
Well, he's in Pakistan.
Obviously, you need to pull out and move troops somewhere else because you're not going to solve this situation this way. You take the pressure off bin Laden, you let him pop his head up, you get good intelligence out there, and then you pounce on it.
Well,
it's over with.
John, thank you for calling.
I think the caller makes a great point, which is when we talk about winning, when we talk about can you succeed there, well, we have to define what the terms are. Is it nation building to reconstitute a government that's not the Taliban that allows women to go to school? Is it to prop up the existing government, which we now know, you know, all kinds of problems with the election? Or is it to find al-Qaeda, break the ties with the Taliban, and make sure that the United States is safe?
Well, I think the fundamental goal has to be to ensure the safety of the United States of America. And one way to do that is to protect Pakistan, a country that has the nuclear bomb.
Right.
If the Taliban regains a foothold or takes over in Afghanistan, that's an increasing threat to the people in Pakistan. They've had a lot of problems just this past week in Pakistan, their defense bureau, their equivalent, I guess, of the Pentagon, was attacked. People were holding hostages in there for several hours. So it's very much a very, very dire situation, but it's something that Obama is going to be faced with, this crucial decision, as he has to listen to the military advisors, to the political advisors, on what direction do we move in here.
And I certainly hope, and taking politics out of it, I hope that the president is very successful in articulating to the American people exactly what the U.S. policy is in the Middle East. I'll give Eric credit. He's absolutely right. I don't think there's a very clear appreciation on the part of most Americans about exactly what our master plan is for American involvement, military or diplomatically, in that part of the world. And maybe it's, as Carol said earlier, the reception of the Nobel Peace Prize that will give him a substantial enough platform to do it. But he needs to make it clear. He needs to make it bipartisan, and everybody needs to have a clear understanding of what that is.
There was some word that came out from the White House this week that they think that there's a chance that you can work with some elements of the Taliban if the focus remains on al-Qaeda, that, attack al-Qaeda, we can work with some elements of the Taliban. Does anybody here on the panel think that that's a good idea?
I think that if they can take these members of the Taliban, many of whom are illiterate and very poor, and give them something that they can cling to so that they have some other reason to exist other than be a fight. Right now they have nothing to lose. So I think that was the idea. That's kind of a nation-building idea. But I think when the election in Afghanistan was shown to be a corrupt election with vote fixing and ballot box stuffing, I think that's a big problem. I don't know how you get around that.
Let's go to Michelle in Chicago, listening to us on WLS. Hi, Michelle.
Hi.
What are your thoughts tonight?
Well, I have 2 points. First is in response to the Democrat strategist who was talking about there were no weapons of mass destruction found in Iraq. And that sort of depends on how narrow of a definition you use, weapons of mass destruction. There was plenty of evidence of chemical warfare and of genocide of certain...
Michelle is breaking up a little bit.
If you use mustard gas, mustard gas is as much a weapon of mass destruction as a warhead if you're wiping out entire villages.
Michelle, we thank you for your call. Eric Edelstein, what do you think about that? She said that there's mustard gas in Iraq that Obama did have.
Yeah, look, everyone agrees. Saddam Hussein was a horrible dictator who used chemical weapons on his own people. The question was, we were told, we were sold that this was an imminent threat to the United States. Him having chemical weapons that he used on his own people was not an imminent threat to the United States and had nothing to do with 9/11.
1-800-723-8289. Let's go to Ron, listening to us on WLS in Chicago. Hi, Ron.
Yeah, I was in the military police after the war, 47 and 48, and everybody sort of forgets the communists were rioting over there then and trying to take over Germany, trying to take over half of Europe. And they would send 200 of us out with 1,000 rioters. And we complained and complained. At last, they reinforced us. They gave us about 500 guys for 1,000 rioters. But our backs were being washed. It helped that when we had twice as many guys to contain them. And the same with over there. There'd be less casualties per person in the Army. What we went through is not like the combat these guys are going through. They shot a few of us, threw rocks at us, but these guys are total combat. But they need more help. They need guys to watch their backs and to help them.
Thank you very much for calling. The point that I hear Ron making is that, Carol, it would be unfair to the men and women who are there right now if we don't send in more troops to support them.
And you're going to hear a lot about that as the Congress debates it. And as editorial writers debate, it's going to come right down to the soldier. And this may sound rather superficial, but the other day I was watching television, one of the cable channels, and they had an embedded reporter and a camera woman in Afghanistan, and they're trying to climb up the top of this mountain where the American military was trying to take a village, and they didn't know where to walk because there are landmines all over there. You could see the fear in their eyes. And these are embedded people. They're not professionals. And they couldn't breathe. You know, they were huffing and puffing and carrying their equipment and worrying they were going to get their limbs blown off. So it's pretty gruesome.
And if that's the situation that a reporter and a camera person had,
can
only imagine what it's like for the soldiers.
Absolutely, John. And I just say it speaks to my total level of discomfort that I'm even having this discussion. I mean, you know, look, national security is a part of politics. But whatever in history, it came out of the Defense and State Department conference rooms and onto the political talk shows, a matter of how we conduct the nation's national security. Man, I wish we could go back in time and reverse that trend.
And we'll continue talking about that after we come back.
Years of engineering excellence is right on time. It's GMC Truck Month. Get into the Sierra 1500 SLT with an available 403 horsepower 6.2 liter V8. It's the most powerful half-ton V8 in its class. Plus, it comes with the safety and security of OnStar, standard for 1 year. And now get great financing offers, like 0% APR for 60 months for qualified buyers on all 09 Sierras, or $6,000 total cash back on 09 Sierra 1500 extended and crew cab vehicles that have been in stock the longest. Step up to the best. It's GMC Truck Month. See your GMC dealer today. Based on 2009 GM large pickup segment, excludes other GM vehicles. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations. Cashback only on 20% of vehicles available to dealer as of 9/21/09. Monthly payment is $16.67 for every $1,000 you finance. Example down payment 8.3%. Some customers will not qualify. Not available with some other offers. Take delivery by 11/2/09. See dealer for details.
John, and I'm a Vietnam veteran, and I realize that these guys I watch on TV running towards the assault when they have to, they should in reality drop their packs, because the rear echelon could pick them up and drag them back to the boys when they're in the attack mode. I feel that they should all learn more of jungle training, not be in the open so much, but to really truly be stealth soldiers and to go through heavy terrain, because you can see more through heavy terrain sometimes of the enemy than they see of you. When you get them on the hop, then you can bring in the drones, bring in mortars, bombs, whatever. Then you've got them. And they then have to be on the defense.
And, John, you support the surge of troops in Afghanistan?
Well, I'm actually trying to work out what they mean by surge, because I've never truly understood the word surge. To me, surge seems like an open charge. But otherwise, the jungle training and sneak on the enemies is probably just as good, because you can get on people and destroy them before they see you. You've got to be kind of stealthy. You're actually tracking them, like as if you were tracking deer or animals. People go out and, you know, try to find an animal to attack. Right. But see, after all, men, you've got to attack, you must also try to be stealthy and try and get to them without being seen.
John, we thank you very much for calling us. We thank you very much for your service to our country. Let's go to New York, where Charles is listening to us on XM Sirius. Hi, Charles.
Hi, John. I hope you're enjoying your guest stint.
Very much so.
Good. The lady commented that Gates and Hillary appeared possibly to be on the same page. I just wanted to point out, I think if you look at Gates' recent interviews, the indications are he's not necessarily on the same page. His whole attitude towards things doesn't seem to be as hawkish or as forwardly aggressive as Hillary. For example, he's repeatedly pointed out in interviews that Iran is not that close to a nuclear weapon at the moment, while Hillary's been repeatedly voting for resolutions calling their army agents of terror. She's been referring to the fact that we can obliterate Iran, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, Gates' body language in his recent interviews basically is that he wants to be an honest broker. I have a feeling he's not siding either with Biden or Hillary, and he's using that as a means of maintaining credibility with Obama. I also have a bit of a reaction to the Nobel Peace Prize, which you might or might not want to hear.
10 seconds.
Oh, okay. I think that while I'm a strong supporter of Barack Obama, he should have said thanks, but no thanks. I mean, that way he would have impressed everyone with his gracious modesty. He wouldn't have had to deal with the burdens of his reputation as a peacemaker, and the Nobel Committee would then have felt freer to give it to him again at some point in the future when his credentials for such an award might have been stronger.
Charles, we thank you for calling. What did you think about what he said there?
I agree with him on the Nobel Prize.
Yeah.
On Gates, I think he and Hillary are pretty close, although he made a convincing statement there. The interesting thing about Hillary is how hawkish she is. And the only thing that I could, you know, Hillary was always resented to us as a hard lefty who was at heart not going to support any war. In fact, she is the most hawkish person in the foreign policy team that Barack Obama has around him. I think it's because she's running for president.
Well, that begs my next question, and I'll ask this to Eric. I'll ask this to the entire panel. Are there any circumstances under which Hillary would challenge Barack Obama in a primary? Eric Edelstein.
No.
No.
Nick.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Tell us.
I think I've spent a lot of time looking at Hillary and Bill Clinton. And Bill Clinton was not even governor of Arkansas yet when he and Hillary made a pact that he would become president and serve for 8 years, and then she would become president and serve 8 years. I interviewed the person who drove Hillary Clinton to Fayetteville, where she had her wedding, to Bill Clinton, and this woman was saying, why do you want to go to the South? You have such a great career and so many prospects. And she said, he's going to be president. She put up with a lot. And if Barack Obama's presidency fails, if he doesn't get health care, Hillary Clinton, after he serves 12 years, who knows what her health is going to be like? Well, she'll be in her 70s. I believe that it's possible.
That's different than challenging Obama in four years.
I don't know that she'd want to. Right. You're right. But
yeah.
but I do think that she
has
it. But
if Obama were to totally collapse and be
right.
a failure as president, you
right.
could
if she,
see
if,
it.
If he happen. Were in the depths of a George W. Bush, when, of course, Bush wasn't running for re-election, though, I could imagine that these are extremely aggressive and ambitious, and I think, I'll use the word, ruthless people.
Let's go to Mark in St. Charles, Illinois, listening to us on WLS. Hi, Mark.
Hi, John. Hey, I just had a question for your guests. If track record is important, how can they feel confident the president will make a good strategic decision when, as a state senator in Illinois, he voted present over 100 times, and as a senator and state senator, he really didn't do much significantly to help the state of Illinois? So I just have that question.
He's surrounded by good people, I think.
What are your thoughts on that, Eric?
Well, Abraham Lincoln didn't do a lot till he was president either, and I'm not suggesting that Barack Obama is Abraham Lincoln, but nothing prepares you for being president more than being president, and we don't know whether he'll do that. What we do know is his temperament and his judgment, and I think, to me at least, I can only speak for myself, I have confidence he'll make the right decision.
Nick, is that fair? Nothing prepares you for president as much as being president, so should, in your opinion, should the right go easier on him and not be as critical?
I think they need to give him a rigorous debate. I think they need to give him a rigorous go-around about his decisions, but I'll say this in all great irony, all we have is hope that he will make a great decision.
And that is Nick Tzitzon, our Republican tonight. We thank our Democrat, Eric Edelstein, for being with us, and author Carol Felsenthal. It's been a pleasure, one and all. I also want to thank Tom Veracruz and Ben Stewart for their assistance in the production of this program tonight. Bruce Dumont will be back next week. It's been a pleasure.
100 years of engineering excellence is right on time. It's GMC Truck Month. Get into the Sierra 1500 SLT with an available 403 horsepower 6.2 liter V8. It's the most powerful half-ton V8 in its class. Plus, it comes with the safety and security of OnStar, standard for 1 year. And now get great financing offers, like 0% APR for 60 months for qualified buyers on all 09 Sierras, or $6,000 total cash back on 09 Sierra 1500 extended and crew cab vehicles that have been in stock the longest. Step up to the best. It's GMC Truck Month. See your GMC dealer today. Based on 2009 GM large pickup segment, excludes other GM vehicles. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations. Cashback only on 20% of vehicles available to dealer as of 9/21/09. Monthly payment is $16.67 for every $1,000 you finance. Example down payment 8.3%. Some customers will not qualify. Not available with some other offers. Take delivery by 11/2/09. See dealer for details.
I'm Felix. I've been doing tattoos for over 15 years. I get people in here who ask me about removing a tattoo they don't want anymore. I've really had nothing to help. And then I discovered Wrecking Balm. It's an easy daily fading system. The darkest, deepest pigments, they easily fade without any discoloring, blemishing, or scarring the skin. Wrecking Balm is really the best thing for tattoo regret.
Call right now, 1-800-507-4221 for your in-home 60-day risk-free trial. That's 1-800-507-4221. That's 1-800-507-4221.
Nowadays, when I talk with folks, they know GEICO could save them hundreds on their car insurance. But what they want to know is how GEICO does it. Well, I say, we got tons of great discounts, like good driver discounts, multi-car discounts. And they say, there's no secret formula. And I say, nah, it's just what we do. And then sometimes they say, maybe a talking gecko's a secret. Well, I wouldn't know what to say about that.
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Introducing the Ally Bank 12-month high-yield CD with such a great annual return of 2.05% APY. People think there's a catch. But no, no catch. No teaser rate, no limited-time offer, no fine print, jargon, or legalese. No hidden tricks, traps, pitfalls, curveballs, or doublespeak. Just a 12-month high-yield CD with a rate that's among the most competitive in the country. Call Ally at 877-247-ALLY or go to allybank.com. Ally, straightforward. Member FDIC.
These are tough economic times, so I want you to think about something. Gold. And Goldline is the company you can trust for your gold needs. They've been in business since 1960, so call them today. 877-361-COIN. That's 877-361-COIN. They've been audited from a Big Four accounting firm. Their financials are solid. So call them today for a free investor's kit. 877-361-COIN. You get the free DVD and free shipping on your first order at 877-361-COIN. And remember, goldline.com.